Welcome back. This is Josh Smith with Pro Responder. I'm joined by James Senegal, co-founder of Pro Responder. And good morning, James. How are you?
Good morning, Josh. I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to the conversation today. So we're going to be talking about the kind of leadership training that that we do at Pro Responder. Specifically, we can start by talking about Commanding Leadership, the course that we offer. Right now, as we're recording this, we're seeing information unfold about the Memphis case where Tyre Nichols died in police custody, and the videos have been body cam videos have been released. And so that's sort of the context that we're talking about this in. But tell me a little bit about the kind of leadership training that we do at Pro Responder, James.
Well, Josh, sure. So one of the things that we do at Pro Responder is we really focus on mindset. One of the things that, having worked in law enforcement for the past 20 years and having been exposed to a number of training opportunities from a number of different outfits, one of the things that I can tell you I think we still miss the mark at in law enforcement is training mindsets. We oftentimes focus on the tactics and the tactical things, and I'm not saying that those are any less important, but what I am saying is we have to train our folks to think their way through situations, to think their way through some of the circumstances that they find themselves in. And that's one of the highlights of Pro Responder and what we do with courses like Command and Leadership, courses like our Public Information Officers course, that really, when one looks at a course like that and they see, well, Public Information Officer, but then they come to our course and they find out that it's way more than that, that we're training mindsets, we're retuning mindsets, we're actually focusing on that emotional intelligence and trying to get our participants and at least our courses to think and not just act or not just react. And so I think that's what sets Pro Responder apart. We focus on some of those missing key things that I believe is very important in law enforcement training. And Josh, just to be honest with you, I didn't learn this very early in my career because it was the same exact old way that we've always done things when I first came out the police academy. And as a matter of fact, next month, it'll be 20 years ago. We almost trained robots. And one of the things that I wish I had learned earlier, but I'm glad nonetheless that I did learn it, was when I became a supervisor, and especially a upper admin supervisor, and started having to review complaints that our officers were getting, I realized that we simply just wasn't teaching our officers how to talk to people, that 90% of our complaints were rudeness complaints. And how do we fix that? We fix that by really having our officers think their way through some of these processes and understand that at the end of the day, no matter what a person's done, we're still dealing with human life and we're still dealing with people, and we have to treat them as such.
Yeah. And for those in the audience that don't know, Pro Responder is a little bit different. We try to approach things from a couple of different perspectives. James is a 20-year law enforcement professional. I'm a 30-year media professional. And so we have two different perspectives that we try to bring to every discussion. And our goal is to prepare the men and women who go out there and serve in our communities and give them the tools and at least the thoughts, the things to think about that really sort of equip them for what they're going to face out in the world. And as James just said, in the world, we're not policing objects. You're policing people. And people come in all different shapes and sizes. So this is my question to you, James. Most people don't know what it's like to be in the shoes of law enforcement. Law enforcement is oftentimes under attack. It's not uncommon for people to lie to a police officer, to verbally abuse a police officer. And it's not uncommon for people to try to escape or evade a police officer. So these things happen, and police officers are put in a situation where they have to make some split second decisions and they have to react to the circumstances that are in front of them. And in some of those circumstances, they're truly life or death decisions. And the trouble is these officers don't know which are which. And so we do see an adrenaline, a physical reaction kick in for police officers when they're in these high stress situations. How do law enforcement professionals need to train themselves to work through both the physical realities of hands-on encounters with people and reconcile that with the human side of it, where there's an empathy for the people that they are policing.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of a twofold question and or answer, if you will. For starters, again, you're absolutely correct and spot on. Law enforcement, and if you ask most law enforcement professionals, they'll give you the same answer as to why you became a police officer in the first place, right? And most often than not, it's two answers. One, we actually come out thinking we can save the world. And I believe that most every police officer that comes out of that police academy does have the best intentions at heart. And then the second part of that answer is oftentimes you'll hear us say, no one day or no 2 days are alike. And so police officers like the uncertainty, they like the adrenaline, they like the fact that no 2 days look alike and that every single day they're going to be faced with a different challenge or different circumstance. And so that boredom doesn't sink in, right? And so you'll hear that, you know, commonly throughout the law enforcement profession. But the other part of that is, again, training through, and I hesitate to use the word training. I really don't like that word when it comes to law enforcement development. I prefer to use professional development opportunities or professional development enhancement because we are a profession and we should be developing professionals. And so in order to do that and in order to address some of those circumstances you spoke about is to train our minds and to develop our minds that no matter what, we have to be the professional. We have to stay professional. We have to approach every situation in a professional manner. And we do that through repetition, thought processes. Again, most of the training opportunities that I've seen in my law enforcement career have been training in a tactical manner to a response that we want to put ourselves on autopilot for. And that's just not the way, in my opinion, to develop an officer. We don't stop and think our way through some of these situations. And, you know, oftentimes, and again, we're dealing with human beings, right? You know, the public think that in one case, we should be developing robots, right? That we're somehow programmed that every single thing that we do have to be perfect. And it's just not the reality. We're still dealing with human beings in as it relates to law enforcement professionals. And so with that comes emotion, with that comes adrenaline, with that comes, you know, all of those things that come into play when it's time for us to make a decision. But what we hope for, and especially what we try to develop in our participants in Pro Responder, is that at least one person in that circumstance can step back, take a bird's eye view and say, let me assess or let me reassess what's going on here. And let me focus on whether or not everybody, irregardless of rank, is making the right decisions at the right times for the right reasons. And so that's one of the things that we talk about in developing those mindsets is, as a matter of fact, I'll tell you, commanding leadership really was born out of the idea that we were not given or we didn't have any platform for offering professional development, leadership development to the rank and file. And I'll tell you, like, for example, here in Texas, you know, you really don't get any leadership training, any formalized leadership training until you hit the first line supervisor rank. And even with that, you become a first line supervisor in your agency tomorrow, you've got 12 months to take the minimum required new supervisor course. And I've often asked this of agency and agency administrators, so what are you doing the first 11 and a half months? Do we just forgive every mistake that these now professionals that have been put in a leadership position make? Or do we and should we train them, develop them beforehand to make some of these decisions? And so the same thing with the rank and file. We don't want to train robots that are just responsive to the everyday conditioning of that job assignment. We want to train or we want to develop mindsets that these young men and women that are out here taking an oath to protect and serve can actually adapt to, give them some input, give them some leadership opportunities to make decisions. And that's what command and leadership is all about. Again, I'll tell you, it was born out of the idea that we just didn't have anything from a leadership development perspective for the rank and file. And I'm happy to say now that after having exposed this platform to agencies across the state, we've gotten a number of agency requests for developing something like this, or allowing for supervisors to sit in on this particular platform. And so I'm glad that we're kind of taking heed to this type of development, but I think we still have a long way to go.
I would agree. I think, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, but your position and my position, I think we would agree that an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. And whether we're talking about leadership training that we do, officer safety training, community policing training, public information training, all of those things really are driven by the idea that we want to keep ourselves out of trouble. We want to keep ourselves out of those bad situations. And so the professional development that we're looking for is on the front end. In the Memphis case, for example, and it's not the only case. The George Floyd case was the same. As we see video and as information becomes available, there's this reaction. And there's a reaction, understandably, from Americans, from the community, from just human beings watching sort of this horrific situation play out. But there's also a reaction in law enforcement, I would think. Tell me what that reaction is in law enforcement when you see stuff like this.
Yeah, so I can say this as it relates to both the George Floyd case and now this case in Memphis that I'm very proud of from law enforcement, and that's coming out in the interim, in the beginning, and denouncing or opposing the actions that we saw in both the George Floyd case and now this Memphis case. I'm super proud of law enforcement for having done that. I think that we've had some situations, certainly, that we had not been so responsive to come out and just call wrong. And as we talk about in our PIO course, sometimes you just got to call it what it is. And so I'm glad to see that the law enforcement community as a whole, at least from what I've seen so far in both mainstream media and social media, have come out and really taken a stance against what we saw in Memphis and what we saw in the George Floyd case. So I'm super proud for that. But the other thing in terms of being reactive to what we've experienced and what we've seen is, you're right. You know, we talk about this all the time. And one of the staple messages that I always give in every single audience that I get in front of to develop leaders and to teach is that I don't want you to become the next YouTube training video. So a lot of these situations that we've seen, we've got to put some policies, some protocols, some procedure in place to prevent the next George Floyd, to prevent the next Memphis from happening. And that's where I talk about training up the mindset to really make your actions follow goodwill and good intent. There's no doubt about it that in that Memphis case, from what we've seen so far, and I know that general public is very limited to the information that we've been exposed to or that we have, but from what we've seen so far, there's no doubt about it that there were not good intentions that night.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot is you have to address the obvious. When something's obviously wrong, you have to address that. And there are cases, and I'm not talking about any particular case, but there are cases where it's not obvious, where you know, you can't see the body camera footage doesn't show a piece of information. There's other factors involved, and law enforcement sometimes in the 21st century, in the beginning anyway, we sometimes automatically blame law enforcement or the assumption of guilt is there before we really know all the facts. And that's created by sort of this natural process of an investigation has to be done fairly accurately, and that takes time. And so there's a lot of information that we can't see in the beginning, the general public can't see. So we do ask the public and the profession and really everybody, the media, to be patient and let the process work itself out. And I agree with you completely. What we've seen so far out of Memphis was there was no delay in making information available. There's no it creates the appearance of transparency and makes sure that everybody understands that we're all on the same page here, that when a wrong is done, we as a society demand that that wrong be corrected. And so my question to you is, at what level does the responsibility to develop professional law enforcement lay? Is it with the line officer coming out of the academy? Is it with trainers like you and me? Is it with administration who has to make the decision whether they're going to budget for it or can budget for it? Is it city councils who have to choose to or not to invest in professional development? Is it with the community who has to demand that their elected representatives support training in law enforcement? Where is the demand for good professional development within law enforcement? Where does that have to start?
Simplistically put, I believe it's with every single piece or every single stakeholder that you just named. That's where the responsibility lies. It starts at the recruitment process, making sure that agencies are recruiting the very best, the best areas, the cream of the crop. I still like to believe this, that law enforcement is, despite what we've seen in mainstream media and despite some of these horrific incidents that we've had to experience and some of these steps back we've had to take as a law enforcement community because of some of these horrific incidents, I still believe that law enforcement is a trusted part of the community. And one of the things that I often talk about in every single opportunity I get a chance to stand in front of law enforcement professionals is, never mind what you see on mainstream media, make sure that your relationship is intact with your community. And if you do that, I think this perception that the world hates law enforcement would certainly be diminished. But that responsibility lies on every single stakeholder you named. Everybody from city council members and government officials, county commissioners that have the responsibility to ensure that we do have funding for law enforcement professional development. It starts at the recruitment level to ensure that we are recruiting, again, the best of the best. You've heard it just like I have, and we've actually talked about this in a lot of our training platforms. You know, what do police officers tell young kids now when they say, hey, I'd like to be a police officer when I grew up? We tell them to run, and that's not the right thing to do, because if we're not recruiting good quality outstanding citizens and candidates, then who are we recruiting? One thing about law enforcement is we can never stop hiring. We're going to have folks on the streets, on the grounds, working the beats. So certainly in the beginning of that process, going into the police academy, one of the things that I understand the premise behind it, but one of the unfortunate things is that we train to minimum standards. If you look at every training requirement here, just in Texas, it'll say, and I quote, minimum standards. You look at every learning objective or lesson plan for every training opportunity that we can expose officers to here in Texas, and it'll give you those minimum requirements. And so I think we can address some issues there with that. I don't like minimum requirements, but again, it starts, it certainly rolls over from the recruitment to the academies, making sure that these academies are training to the best that they can as it relates to making decisions and not, again, training robots. Coming out the academy and the failed training program, you know, agencies ensuring that they're selecting the very best field training officers to train their probationary police officers, and not just the guy who's been on the department for 20, 25 years who hates the world. you know, ensuring that you have representatives that actually buy into what you want to be as an agency, training your cream of the crop, training your folks up to instill that agency image within that officer. And then outfits like yours and mine with Pro Responder, you know, we know that we're dedicated to the very best high quality professional development opportunities that, you know, this country has to offer. And you and I know for a fact, we study, we ingest and digest so much as it relates to the latest and greatest and what's relevant in today's world as it relates to the law enforcement profession. And we try to bring that to every single platform that we have to offer. So I believe, again, every single stakeholder that you mentioned have that responsibility. But then lastly, it really falls on the agency administrator. Agency administrators should know exactly what their personnel has been exposed to relative to training. One thing I can tell you is here's the three ways agencies get sued: through negligent retention, through negligent supervision, and then through negligent training. Every one of those aspects I just named fall within that community of stakeholders you mentioned.
There's a reality that you mentioned a little while ago I want to come back to real quick. We talk about recruiting in one of our courses, and there is this this thing that happens. You know, I ask hundreds and hundreds of law enforcement officers the same question: why did you become a police officer and do you like it? You know, and the vast majority of them, 99.9% of them, will tell me, I became a police officer to serve my community, to protect my community. It's truly, that's the identity. That's what got them into it. They have a servant heart. They have a desire to see their community prosper, and they want to help. And they become a member of law enforcement. And then a little while later, we'll ask them that second question: what do you tell a young person today who is thinking about getting into law enforcement? And almost universally, their response is run. Now, fortunately, that number is not 99%. That number is closer to 60%, 70%, because I love the ones that say, I tell them it's the greatest profession in the world. That's the sentiment that I think all of us really want our law enforcement professionals to have, that they believe in their job, they believe in what they're doing, and we want them, and this is just a community member talking, we want them to have that heart from the day they sign up to the day they retire. And so, you know, the how do police officers maintain that spirit, maintain that heart of service, maintain that love of the job, especially when they're under fire, when they're under attack from outside, and when they don't have the resources they need? Every agency in the United States is struggling right now to find qualified, capable police officers. Resources are limited. So how do police officers maintain that attitude that we really want and need them to have?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, one of the things that I did as a supervisor when I was able to make decisions put processes in place, put policy in place that, you know, officers had no choice but to abide by, or they would be in violation of that policy, protocol, decision, or directive, was to make sure that I exposed all of our personnel to positive contacts. And that's one of the things, again, that I talk about with chief administrators. And I've posed this question a number of times, standing in front of a room full of chief administrators, you know, hey, do you ensure that your personnel, your agency personnel, is having positive contacts every single shift? And they look at me with these big eyes like, what the hell are you talking about? You know, and so it's not rocket science question. It's a basic question, right? When you're making traffic stops on a daily basis, and I don't care if those traffic stops 100 out of 100 times go as planned, meaning that you make the traffic stop, you either issue a warning or a citation or whatever that traffic stop warrants, you get back in your patrol car, you're safe, you're good to go, you walk away from it, no harm, no foul, everybody goes home safe. Or you go and pick up a shoplifter from a grocery store shoplifting call, or you go and arrest, you know, a spouse for domestic violence, or you go to a shooting call, or you go to a robbery call, it doesn't matter. Those are all, in essence, a negative contact. Even that traffic stop that went as planned, a negative contact. And so one of the things that I did as a police supervisor was I tried to ensure and make sure that my personnel was having positive contacts on a daily basis. Hey, are you stopping in your convenience store for more than just a free Coke? Are you going in there to talk to people and to talk to the clerk and to check on the store, you know, personnel and make sure that they're okay? Are you stopping in your banks just to make sure that they are okay and that they know that you're there in the community and that you need, if they were to need something, that you were, you know, just a phone call away? Are you going by your neighborhood parks? You talk about being part of the community. One of the issues that I've seen, and this is kind of anecdotal, but one of the issues I've seen in law enforcement, talk about, you know, officers being asked the question, why did you get in law enforcement? Well, I wanted to protect my community. Well, the average officer drives 45 minutes one way to work. I'm not saying that that's the fix, is to make sure that every officer who's patrolling a particular subdivision, neighborhood, community is from that community. But even if they're not, they have to become part of that community. And so going to the basketball court, stopping by the football field, going to the baseball practice field and just waving at people, just having some of these positive contacts, I think is important. And what it does, in my opinion, is that it reduces the mindset that everybody I deal with is a bad guy, a bad gal, and they're out to get us, and they're out to when we expose ourselves to negative over and over and over and over again, that's how we start to see the world. And so I believe exposing to those positive contacts, I believe reassigning people. You know, if you've got if you've got an old crummy detective that's been in detective work for the last 15 years and he or she hates the world, then maybe they need to be exposed to some community policing opportunities. Reassigning your traffic enforcement folks who all they do on a daily basis is write tickets and they've become numb to human sympathy and empathy. Not saying that they should be out not writing tickets or should be out issuing warnings to people. That's their decision to make. But just so that they don't become so complacent in their mindset that they stop seeing people as people. So I think exposing them to more positive contact, positive interactions. When you have your national night out, don't allow for your officers. And I know because I've seen it. I've had to address it within my agency. Don't allow for your officers to stand around watching the clock. How much longer do we have to be out here? Train those mindsets that they feel like they want to be out there, that they want to participate with the community, that they want to be exposed to the great people within their communities. Because at the end of the day, those are the people that they're looking for support from if or when that bad disaster happens within the community.
Yeah, that's great advice. And that really is what we dedicate ourselves to at Pro Responder is developing this kind of thinking and these kinds of attitudes within police officers. It is a noble profession. It does deserve our support. It does deserve our respect. Notwithstanding the mistakes that we see, the positive from that is that mistakes can be controlled, corrected, and we can train to prevent future mistakes. And so that's what we spend our time doing at Pro Responder. Thank you for joining us today. There'll be many more conversations to come. And James, thank you for your time and your insight and wisdom in the conversation.
Absolutely, Josh. And you know, I always sign off every single one of my opportunities to be on a platform or in front of an audience with this one quote. And that's that every single law enforcement professional out there has got the responsibility to leave the badge in a better place than they found it. So thank you. Thank you all for listening. And we look forward to bringing you much more content.